Welcome to the E-Commerce Society podcast, where you can learn how to start, grow, scale, or launch your dream e-commerce and product-based business, all without ever relying on ads or social media. Each week, you will hear step-by-step, tangible, and fluff-free strategies to help you skyrocket your sales and traffic, gain more visibility for your business, and create those mega loyal customer super fans, which you totally need. Hi, I'm Carrie Fitzgerald, your cheerleader and hype girl. I went from corporate marketing in the education space to building, scaling, and selling my own product-based business. And today, my work and mission is to help founders just like you create and scale the world's most magnetic brands and turn them into fucking empires. So whether you're thinking of starting a product biz or scaling yours, this podcast is the secret sauce to making all those dreams come true. So grab a coffee or grab a champagne and let's dive into it. Welcome to the podcast, Julia. I am so happy to have you here today. How are you?
I am great. And it's so fun to be here.
Yay.
I listen to you all the time. So now I get to actually be part of it. How fun.
Aw, yay. Thank you so much. I appreciate the support. So you have a really interesting story and journey, and I want to kind of dive all into that. First, just let everyone know who you are and what your business is for people that don't know yet.
So I am the founder of a company called Jewel Ya. And I say it kind of funny because my name is Julia Winter. And it's kind of obviously a take on my name, but it's a jewelry business. We design and manufacture jewelry and sell it nationwide. And I'm just starting my 21st year.
That's amazing. And I really would love just to take it back to the beginning, because one, I just want to say congrats on 2 decades of having a business. That's pretty huge. And I don't think you see a lot of that. I mean, you might have a different perspective. You might have a lot of business friends who have kind of been along this journey with you over the last 10 years or so. But you usually hear people having businesses for, you know, 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, maybe a decade. But 20 years is a really long time. So I'm really excited to hear a little bit more about how you got started, the journey, and like how you've made the business last. I'm really eager to kind of talk about that, because for people listening that have maybe had their business for a year or 2 years and they're struggling, it's hard right now. I see so many people struggling to get any sales, and I think people want to know, well, how do I make it last? You know? So let's just dive into it. Walk us back to the early days. What were you doing when you decided you wanted to start a business? And in particular, I really like to know, jewelry is a really saturated space. There are a million jewelry brands today, but was it like that 20 years ago? And how has, like, you've started a business before the digital shit has kicked in? I mean, now it's all about TikTok and Instagram and SEO and blog content. It's different now than when you started. So walk us back to the early days and like what made you start the business? How did you get started? And how did you sort of try to position yourself to be different than other jewelry brands 21 years ago, which is crazy.
Yeah, no, that was a key part, mm-hmm. obviously. So 21 years ago, and mm-hmm. maybe for a few years, I was with IBM and Xerox, and I was in technology sales. And towards the end of my career at Xerox, I was in mergers, acquisitions, creating some really unique, big partnerships. Loved it, mm-hmm. but I was always on a plane. And my husband and I were trying to build a family. I now have 2 boys. And I was looking for what could I do on my own mm-hmm. that would allow flexibility and choice, which I needed to have in order to have some balance and raise my kids. I went and worked with a life coach, mm-hmm. and that was super helpful in giving me the courage to say, you know what, I am going to step back and get off this corporate, you know, plan that I'd had always thought I would do. Mm-hmm. And she helped me figure out like jewelry. I was like, I'm very creative. I know how to make a little bit. I can go take classes. There is a very, I don't have to have a big investment to get started. I didn't want to go out and look for investors and create this big thing. Mm-hmm. I wanted easy entrance, easy exit. So I pulled $400 out of the bank. I went down. In fact, I was on a conference call the entire time from Phoenix to Tucson. Went to the gem show, bought a bunch of gemstones that I just fell in love with visually, took classes, and then started putting trunk shows together in my dining room and inviting friends over to get customer feedback. I mean, I had fantastic sales training and customer focus training from IBM and Xerox, best in the business. So I knew I needed to get feedback, get people to help me. And then from there, I really decided, like, okay, how am I going to become sustainable? I got to make this work. Otherwise, I go back to corporate America. So that's when, back then, you didn't sell online. It was all in person, and you either were direct or you found wholesalers. So I knew I needed to be multi-channel, and I first went after wholesale while I was doing trunk shows because, you mentioned like jewelry saturated. It was super important for me to have my business become legitimate. Like, I didn't want to be the mom down the street going to Michael's, buying beads, and creating stuff, because that's really what everybody, you'd say, oh, I'm designing jewelry, and they'd go, oh, my neighbor does that. And so I fought really hard to become a legitimate business. And the wholesale, and being able to work with retailers, that helped me get started and become legitimate.
A lot of things to unpack here. I also want to say I really appreciate the scrappy beginnings of businesses. So you said, I took $400 from the bank, personal money, and I went to a trade show. I think you said it was a trade show, and I bought, you got started. So you got started with $400. Very relatable. I love that so much because, again, we chatted about this a little bit before we started recording, but I said, I really appreciate the realistic stories. I really appreciate this, the founder who, again, took $400 from personal money and started small, but started smart. And that's really what you did. You knew that you needed to do market research because of your corporate background. And another reason why having a background of something, sales is always going to be a good thing to have. Sales and marketing, customer service, customer support, all those things are really, they will help you grow your business and get traction faster. I know that my background of sales and marketing 100% played a huge role in when I started my first business. I kind of knew certain things to do, and I knew these are the non-negotiables. And so I really appreciate when people, they have those $400 from the bank and I just went for it, and not like, oh, well, I started a business because I'm a creator or I'm an influencer and I have 3 million followers on TikTok. And so I decided to create merch and do a print-on-demand store. I like how I do air quotes when I say that. I created a print-on-demand store. And and I made seven figures in a month. Well, that's not realistic. Like, that is not the normal thing. And I just want to kind of highlight that for you because I think that was a really smart thing that you did, that you said, I'm just going to use a little bit of money and I'm just going to kind of go for it. I don't want to be the mom next door selling, Michael's jewelry. That made me laugh, by the way. So I love that. So I just want to say, I just appreciate your, it was a scrappy start, but you did things in a smart way, which I think is important. What were you selling back then? Because I know what you sell now. I know that you sell, I'm wearing your earrings. I'm wearing your, I believe it's an opal,
Opal,
your
yeah.
necklace, which I'm obsessed with. I pretty much wear this every day with my compass necklace. What were you selling back then? Because I can imagine jewelry, again, was a little bit different than what it is today. And obviously jewelry is a trending thing. Different things are going to be trending. But what did you kind of start with? How much stuff did you have from going to that trade show? And then I know that you were doing wholesale, but yeah, like walk us through those early days. What were you selling? What were you focusing on? And how were you doing wholesale? Like, how did you know what to do? Because again, people that are listening, this was 21 years ago. There was no YouTube then. Google, I'm sure, was very different. It was different to find information than it is today. Now you're like, I want to start an online business, and you can literally go to YouTube and find a bunch of my videos and a bunch of other videos that walk you through step by step, but that didn't exist then. So how did you find information? I'm just curious.
So I spent a lot of time looking for other people that were already doing it. In fact, there was a jewelry artist up in Portland, Oregon, and I called her and like, tell me about your business. How did you get started? And back then, you didn't see somebody in Portland as competition. So she was so happy to share information with me about how she got started. So I've always done that in any part of my life, is go find other people who are doing it and just ask a lot of questions. And from that, you always get little steps you can take. So, while I was starting the wholesale, you're selling mostly in the beginning to small boutiques and stuff. So it's very manageable. You just have to be willing to take a whole lot more no's than yeses. And that's where my training, I was in competitive replacements of, business systems. So I heard no all the time. So I'm never worried about that. But at the same time, I was selling in my dining room. I was getting friends to do trunk shows for me. I was really getting a lot of feedback and understanding, what trends and stuff were. So if we talk about what were designs like back then, everything was beaded.
Beat it.
Very, very much beaded. One of the other things I did, like I would spend a lot of time going to some of the nicer stores like Neiman's and Saks. So I figured out how do I create a really nice looking piece that looks much more expensive using natural materials, not using costumey fake crystals and things like that, but using natural metals, natural gemstones, and being able to create that higher end look that, people can wear to the boardroom, they can wear out to dinner, but then, you can also put it on with a cute t-shirt and go to Target. So that's kind of, I focused in on like, what do me and my friends want? And from that created my trends and whatnot. What I do love is that I'm working with chains now and beads now that I worked with 20 years ago. It doesn't change that much. Sure, do I work with many more and more additional styles and chains? Absolutely. But jewelry does not change as fast as fashion does. And so you really have a long runway with the different pieces. But like the paperclip chain, which is everything right now, that was one of the first chains that I ever purchased and worked with.
Oh, wow. So
So
funny.
I think that's pretty fun.
It is fun. Okay, so you were doing trunk shows, you were doing wholesale. When did you first see some traction in the business? And when I say traction, I mean you're getting more of the yeses, you're getting the store. And again, this is totally different than it is today, but for people that focus on wholesale today, then this is like what you have to kind of go through. But you were doing all that when, so traction. So you heard more yeses and your sales were growing. Let's just say they were going upward. How long did it take you? Like how many years would you say?
I'd say like at that 3 year mark, I had a lot more confidence. I had a number of clients, customers that have come back. I was able to see where things worked, where they didn't. And then, from the wholesale perspective, I have learned a lot, how to do line sheets, how to come in looking like a professional business. And I'd really feel like at that 3 year point, one of the things that I think is unique about Arizona is we have a lot of really nice resorts here. And people come to Phoenix from October through May. And I was able to start partnering with a few different resorts. And they would carry my line, and they always had trunk shows, which means they wanted you to sit there from Friday through Sunday, which I could do, and sell at trunk shows. And those were like quick returns. You got feedback really quick. They would see, oh my gosh, the line is selling. People like her. Okay, we'll bring more in. And then from that, I would meet clients that would invite me to go to other places. So it was really being willing to put myself out there, do those hard things. My kids were little then. So the fact that they could go to the resort and go swimming while I was selling, like they were delighted. So I wasn't the one having fun with them, sadly, but it provided some nice little benefits and stuff. But I would say it really does take like 3 or so years to where you've had all those learnings. You've had things go right, you've had things go wrong. And that's where it kind of came together.
I love that. And then what next? So this was, I don't know, let's say 16, 17 years ago. I don't think things were very digital still at that point. So let's kind of shift gears. So you're doing wholesale, you're getting into resorts, and I love that you said your willingness to try different things. That's a huge part of having a business today, is just having that willingness to try things, put yourself out there. You might not want to spend your weekend going to a trade show or a trunk show and do that, but you do it anyway because you never know where your next big opportunity is going to come from. And those small, like micro steps that you're taking, they all lead you to like the next big thing. So I'm a huge believer in that. And I see a lot of people not willing to do that today. They think, oh, well, Susan from YouTube said I should be making, six figures after the month after I launched the business. And that's not the norm. I think you can if you have a huge audience. If you are a celebrity and you launch
Very, very
a liquor
unusual.
company or a t-shirt line, yeah, sure, you're going to make a lot of money because you already have a massive audience. That's a an unfair advantage that the normal person who starts a store doesn't have that. But what were some of the next things that you did? I'm curious more so in when things started to move online, when having a Shopify store is now the norm, or maybe you didn't start with Shopify, maybe you started with GoDaddy, or maybe you started with, I don't know, like WordPress with a WooCommerce plugin, like whatever you did. I'm just curious, when did things start turning digital for your business? And when they did, how has that been for you? Because I think when you start your business in one way and you're used to doing the in-person, the markets, the wholesale, and then you have to start selling online and you have to build a website and you have to compete with the million of other jewelry businesses now. How has that been like for you? And maybe now you're used to it, but I'm just curious that transition for you and when that actually happened. Because I don't even know when the first online store websites happened. I should probably know that, but I don't know, because since I started, that's been the norm, So I didn't know pre websites. So yeah, talk us through that digital transition for you.
I launched my first website work first like web presence in 2013. I still have the notebooks because I would print out every single sale and put it in these books because, to make sure I could track it. Because if a client comes in and they want to know what they bought so they can get something, this or that, I always kept really good records. So 2013, and the main reason I did it was it was kind of like having a line sheet or a lookbook. So I didn't initially think of it as going out and trying to move my sales that direction. I thought of it as a tool that I could use with people to continue the conversation, to use with stores and say, oh, go look at this. We could do it like that. It was that lookbook so that I didn't have to keep creating and putting things to print and which was a very expensive process. I worked with a web company called Pinnacle Cart, and it was, in order to keep your products in order, we had to have a spreadsheet of everything. It was so awful. I mean, like, I laugh now at Shopify. You just move something and then it changes the order of where it shows up in your catalog. But yeah, the changing to online has been great. So much learning. In fact, right now I consider having an online store like playing with a Rubik's cube every day. The cubes change. It is always, I mean, you are always in for a new challenge because you're working in one direction and then a new app comes out or something changes, or and you have to find a new way to go figure it out, and you really don't know what you're doing.
Yep.
So I have some great help. I work with some fantastic, talented people, but a lot of times we are learning as we go.
Yes, absolutely.
And so I, you know, you just have to be willing every day to see it as it's supposed to be a Rubik's cube. It's not supposed to be solved. If it were solved, then what, you know, we'd be doing something else. But another thing I would say that I think was super important in my journey throughout this, having to work and needing to earn a living is a lot of motivation. And I never, to me, the choice was, if I don't make my company successful, then I'm going back and I'm going to work for someone else. And I lose my flexibility.
Okay.
So I think that whole thing about knowing that, hey, this isn't a hobby, I don't have the opportunity to say I'm quitting. Because if I'm quitting, then I'm going to go work somewhere else. So I think sometimes it's sad for people that don't have that, I have to be successful at this, I have to make money. Because when that's the case, you find a way to solve the problem.
Yeah, I love that so much. When was there ever a time when you thought, it doesn't mean that your business wasn't working, but for, I would say, our mental health reasons more in particular, was there ever a time when you just said, I cannot do this anymore, I hate the business, I'm going to go back to like an IBM? Or, you know, luckily for you, you had a very established corporate career. So if you did want to go back to that, you could find something, right? But for some people, they either don't have, maybe, I don't know, they haven't got that. I see a lot of people that graduate college and they're like, all right, well, I see everyone else on TikTok starting businesses, so I'm just going to do that too. Like, I don't know. It's a different time period, I think. I'm also like, when I graduated, I traveled and did a lot of that kind of stuff first, but I had, you know, 10 years almost of marketing and sales jobs in corporate companies. And that teaches you so much about starting a business. I mean, I'm so grateful that I have that background. I would be very different if I just jumped into having a business when I was young and didn't know what I was doing. It's different then, because I'm older now. When I finished school, you never heard of someone say, I'm going to be a creator, I'm going to be a content creator. You would have been like, who the fuck do you think you are? Like, I don't know. Things are different now. And, you know, it's for good or bad. I'm glad that I didn't live in that time, to be honest with you. But yeah. So did you ever have a time when you just said, you know, I just don't want to do this anymore?
There are plenty of times where I'm tired of elements of it. Mm-hmm. But I have from time to time thought, wow, it really would be nice to have a 401k again and have like benefits that I'm not buying and, you know, that sort of thing. But no, I can't say that because, again, I was always going to have a job. I mean, even if I didn't need to earn money, I need to work for my own mental health too.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I love creating things. I love, and creating things doesn't necessarily have to be making something, but just watching something in a process and making progress on it. So I can't say there was ever that time, but there are times where I feel like I need to step back. I would say I'm a bit of a workaholic because I truly enjoy what I do.
Yeah, I hear you.
So I could use a little more balance and that sort of thing. But I think for most of us who own businesses, that is a that's just the way it is. That's how we're wired.
I agree with you. It's hard to, it's when you like doing it, it's, you know, you want to keep doing it, especially if things are going well. I think if things aren't going well, then that might be, you're like trudging through mud or something. But if things are going well and you're having fun and, you know, you're making the right decisions, then it's easy to work a lot. I get that as well. And I'm someone the same, like if I like what I'm doing, you have to like pull me away from, you got to pull me away from the work because I'm all in because I like it. But if I don't like it and I'm not enjoying it, it's really hard for me to do it. Like I want nothing to do with it. So I don't know what, Enneagram, there must be something in like the Enneagram structure of people who have that kind of personality.
And I think we all like, there are things that I dislike doing very much. And there are times I really hate some of that. So you have to figure out, okay, how can I do this better? Is there someone else I can involve? You know, what can I do to change this dynamic? Because in the end, it's like, am I going to be happy today or am I going to be sad today? I got to pick. Yeah. And I can influence that. So no matter, you know, what the circumstances are.
I love that. And then let's move forward to today. What do you feel like some of the things that you've done over the last 20 years? So obviously, you know, the first probably many years of your business, you're building those foundations, you're gaining confidence, you're learning the things, you're learning wholesale and how to sell in person and, you know, how to take feedback from customers and implement that. You're building the website, doing all those things. What would you say maybe over the last, since you've built the website and maybe in the last 5 years, what are some of the things that have been the biggest needle movers in the business? If you could identify like a couple things specifically, what would those things be?
I'm writing down a couple of things. So one of the things that I think has been really helpful is also involving some of my own passions. So there are some charities and causes that have meant a lot to me, and I have found ways to partner my business with them. And so then I'm getting a lot of satisfaction personally helping with that. And then, you know, finding new opportunities, making a difference. Like that has been a real, I would say definitely a needle mover, and it constantly keeps things new and fresh. So, you know, that's part of it. It's like, it's very easy to get bored. Mm-hmm. And that's, so having a business where you're dealing with, like right now, my business still has wholesale in it, but I'm definitely more direct to consumer. Through my website, I have a studio where people can now, where we build everything, but it also has a showroom attached to it. So I work by appointment. You know, having those different channels all working together, that has definitely helped to create sustainability. But the other thing, and this is where it kind of involves you. So continuing to educate yourself and not feeling like I know this or I know that is a super important part of my business. So like back when I was in corporate America, I went back and got an MBA and continued learning. And so I have found that now I have to invest in my learning in different ways. And so through podcasts, through talking to other people that are doing the same types of business, whether, you know, it's a different product, we're all in online e-commerce product sales, basically, you know, how are you doing it? What are you doing? But also then taking some different courses, being able like over the summer to work with you and join one of your groups and walk through a process where we're getting new information, where we're learning, where we're having that opportunity to work one-on-one and get feedback and stuff. That is super important to making progress, because if you don't have other new, fresh ideas and information coming at you, how are you going to evolve?
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. Yeah. And there's, you know, balance with the learning. And, you know, I see a lot of people that are, I have to buy a course, I have to do this, I've listened to 300 podcasts, and they're always on this hamster wheel of learning, 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 and not taking time to implement things. And I think that's a huge, huge difference, is that you have to, not you, but like in general, making sure that you're taking the time to implement what you're learning and not just, oh, I'm learning, I'm learning, I'm learning. I've spent time in my own business where it was almost a year of my business. This was 2 years ago. I just felt like I was in all these programs, constantly learning, constantly just always feeling like I had to learn something new. And then I wasn't actually implementing anything. And I was like, I just wasted $30,000 in a mastermind, and I've barely implemented a single thing in it. And now I'm out of the mastermind, and now I have no one to ask questions to. So, but yeah, it's great that, you know, you can do programs, and there has to be some element of learning, and, you know, having a few people that you can have as like a mentor or business friend, you know, that you can ask questions.
Yes.
That's great. Is there anything else? I know that you said you had a couple things that you wrote down. Is there anything else that you feel like, maybe when it comes to marketing, for example, anything within marketing that you feel like has really given you some traction?
So when people, I don't know why, I feel pretty lucky on this, but somehow I started emailing right around the time, if not before, that we started our online presence. And I felt email was a super important mode of communicating. I also have a social presence and work really hard at that, but feel it does not deliver the same level of results. You have to have it all, but, the communicating through email and finding that two way, with your customers is super critical to growing. Whenever I've got lots of friends, that are creating small businesses and stuff, and I will say, like, so what are you doing for communication? Like, oh, Instagram, and we're starting some TikTok or whatever. I'm like, do you have everybody's email address? No. I mean, you feel timid about emailing. And yeah. Let me tell you, I hate to admit this, but I do. When I have friends who unsubscribe, or people that I know of, or I thought they were happy with my products and they unsubscribe, like, I take it personally. And then I have to go put your business pants back on. Yeah. This is life. You know, maybe that person's just overall sick of emails for a while, or this or that or the other thing. It is super important to have that mode of communication. And that is probably the number one communication tool we invest in by far.
I love that. Of course, email is everything. I mean, you can say, you can love or hate it, but email has one of the highest return on investments. And I also see people not leveraging email and only focusing on social media. And it drives me absolutely crazy, because I know better, because I know this is what you need to do and you're not doing it. So I feel this personal crusade to teach people and make people know that, okay, email is a non-negotiable. But some people just don't get it. And then it's hard to push people if I try not to give unsolicited feedback to people anymore. If you ask me what I think, I'll tell you, and I'll be brutally honest. And I've gotten, you know, someone left me a bad podcast review recently because, oh, she's mean and she says this and she is insulting businesses. And I'm like, I'm not insulting anyone. I just don't sugarcoat shit. And if you ask me, Carrie, what do you think of my website? I'm going to rip it apart, but then I'm going to tell you at the end, I can help you make it better. Here's what's not working. I'm not going to sugarcoat shit for you. That's my personality, but I'm also literally, like, you know, I will do everything to help you. I will do everything to make sure that you feel set up for success. You know, like, I just want to, the impact part of me just wants to kind of help people get in the right direction. But yeah, it can be frustrating when people just kind of don't, they're only focusing on social media.
Well, I think it's that there is about 18 months ago, and my timing could be wrong on this, but there was a huge shift in Instagram being helpful to small businesses. And then all of a sudden our engagement was just cruddy. And I realized, like, wow, you know, this, no matter what we're doing, we're not getting traction, it seems like. So why keep going down that path if that's not going to return results? And I'm not saying that we don't get good results, but something changed. And then when you realize that you are powerless in those scenarios. So if they cancel you, I'm very fortunate and thankful none of that's happened. But if that's, like you say, your only mode of communication, then what are you going to do? So, you know, starting from the beginning, gathering customer information for those who want to connect and leveraging that by communicating, asking questions, sending visual, you know, pictures that interest people and show them that they can do new things, or that really helps.
I love that so much. So I have one more question. What advice would you give someone that's new or starting their business? This is sort of a generic question, but I really like it because you'll get different answers from everyone. Everyone will say something different. So I'm curious from your perspective, what is one piece of advice that you would tell that newer business owner that's just starting their jewelry business or their Shopify store now? What should they do? What's your one tip?
One is very hard to say. So I'm gonna say two. Customer driven. Listen to your customers, communicate to your customers, find out what's working, what isn't working, be open. And number two is persevere. Like, just keep going. Like, find a way to change and keep pushing forward.
I love that so much.
I mean, it's very simple and like it's the quickest, but I think the whole perseverance thing, it's very, I feel like in this day and age, it's very, we all kind of take that, well, just forget it then. Well, you can't do that if you want to grow a business. You have to find a way to keep moving forward.
I agree with you. And that can be really hard. It can be hard to know when do I let the business go? When do I not, you know, when is the right time? And sometimes you have to just go with your gut, your heart, data, personal reasons. Everyone's journey is different, but I agree with you. I think you have to come into it treating it like a business and knowing, you know, I will do what it takes to make it work. And then in the end, if things don't work out, I gave it my all. You know, you did everything that you could. And at some point, sometimes a business, it's maybe it was your, maybe it's just not a good business idea. Maybe, you know, we make mistakes with businesses. We choose the wrong product. We choose the wrong sales avenue. You know, we sell on Amazon and then Amazon decides, oh, we're going to actually create that same product as our own. And then your sales diminish. So like shit happens, but you have to give it your all. So I love that so much. Well, thank you so much for being on here. So nice to chat with you and just hear a little bit more about your journey and, you know, how you've grown from a $400, you know, bootstrapped company selling out of the trunk and all that to all the cool things that you're doing today. I absolutely love hearing that journey. And yeah, thank you so much. I think you gave so many awesome things for people listening. So I know that they will enjoy it as well. But thank you so much for being on here, Julia.
Thank you, Carrie. I really, I think since the moment I found you through your podcast originally, you also have that very scrappy tendency about you and being willing to do the hard work and the hard things so that you can get to the good work. And I totally am excited for you with what you have coming. I'm a big believer in what you're looking at, and so I just wish you the best.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so excited. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you love this episode, please go ahead and leave a review on Apple Podcasts and then take a screenshot and share it on your Instagram stories. Tag me in it at Carrie A. Fitzgerald. My name is in the show notes. Thank you so much, and I'll see you guys next week.